Before I entered the Dominican order, I had the privilege of visiting some of their priories and houses all over the world. One of my more memorable trips was to visit Pakistan in the cities of Karachi, Multan, and Lahore. Now, this was not the first time that I had been to a country that operates under Sharia law, but it was the first time that I had been to one during the Muslim month of Ramadan. And because of it, I had a very interesting opportunity to view Christians in a severe minority role, at least in the public sphere. To live as a Christian in a country that is overwhelmingly Muslim has, to say the least, its challenges, especially since Pakistan now seemingly generates a significant number of radical Islamic terrorists. And indeed, there are conflicts and skirmishes that are unjust and that violate basic human rights. Yet these Christians still manage to live their lives, albeit simply, and out of necessity, try to stay under the radar. It is their country, and they feel bound to their own land, much like we do in our own country. And to many of them, to leave Pakistan is unthinkable, and they would do so only under extreme duress. And I suspect that not a few of them would end up as martyrs. Under these conditions, you might surmise that the people would be hardened, depressed, sullen, and definitely cynical. At least, that is what I thought. And though I suspect that things have changed, not just a little bit for the worse, since my visit, given the current state of affairs in the Middle East, I found the people to be anything but hardened, depressed, sullen, and cynical. I will not paint a rosy picture of their lives, since they definitely feel that they get the short end of the stick in life when it comes to just treatment by their government, a dearth of job opportunities, and a lack of any form of expression of speech or free speech. But as Christians, they seem to have integrated quite a lot of the gospel into their culture, even as it sets them apart from their Muslim neighbors. And that's because wherever I went, especially into people's homes, I, who was a total stranger, just a visitor from halfway around the world, was an important guest. And this had tremendous implications for them. The story of the visitation is quite familiar to us all. It is one of the joyful mysteries of the Rosary, and at Mass we hear it multiple times throughout the year, but especially before Christmas. That's because Luke the evangelist wanted to describe events leading up to the birth of Jesus. He does this not just because we want a good story, but also to help us understand God's message to us even before Jesus shows up as an infant, and well before his public ministry some 30 years later. While we understand that he is the Messiah, the one who brings us salvation, God gave us the Holy Family as a model of Christian behavior. The most obvious example is the Holy Family of Joseph, Mary, and Jesus. But today's gospel tells us that it goes beyond the nuclear family and into the extended family to Elizabeth and Zechariah, Mary's cousins. More about them a little bit later. Now, I'm one of those people that used to shop for Christmas presents throughout the year. If I found something interesting for a family member or a friend in July, I would buy it, store it, and then pull it out a week before and wrap it and place it under the tree. Now, before you get out and shoot me as one of those hyper-organized people that manages to get everything done eons ahead of time, let me just tell you that it did not work all the time. I was just hedging my bets. and I was always left with a dozen or so different people on my list for whom I had literally nothing. So in that last week, just like everyone else, I would, in a panic, make haste to get to various stores, malls, and other retail venues looking for that perfect gift. Sometimes we are in such a rush that the amount of time spent looking for a particular person is actually minuscule, and we end up making snap decisions to buy gifts merely based on what retailers have put out as the gift of the season. Oh, and something expensive always seems to be a good substitute for lack of planning. Now, there's nothing wrong with buying gifts or even making gifts. We might even have to work overtime to build up the funds to purchase that perfect gift. Or we might have to set aside hours in our day to craft the gift. And while I don't want to judge or criticize, given that every situation is quite unique, sometimes this time spent is ill spent. It's not to say that it's bad, but rather there is a better way, a more effective way, and often one that is more appreciated. Let's just contrast this with the Blessed Virgin Mary. She traveled to the town of Judah to greet her cousin Elizabeth. Like us and our Christmas shopping, she went in haste. But her haste was different than our haste. Now, the text is silent on what she bought as a gift, or brought as a gift, but culturally she would not have arrived empty-handed. Whatever gift she would have had would have been more or less a token, not entirely meaningless, but let's just say not terribly important. Her actual or true gift was the gift of herself, her presence. That's not presence with a T, P-R-E-S-E-N-T-S, but presence with a C, P-R-E-S-E-N-C-E. She was simply there for her. We know that Elizabeth was 6 months pregnant with John the Baptist, and we presume that Mary stayed with her until his birth. What they talked about, we will never know, and again, this is unimportant, though it wasn't insignificant. Though given the age differences between the two women, you can be certain that they exchanged wisdom. The important part was that Mary passed time with Elizabeth, as if she were the most important person in the world. And while Mary was giving the gift of her presence, Elizabeth was the ever-gracious host, not just to Mary, but by extension for the infant Jesus still developing in utero. Elizabeth, as a member of Mary's extended family, offered her shelter and sustenance. Every single human being is made in the image and likeness of God. So welcoming people, even strangers, into our homes is in essence like welcoming God into our home. Elizabeth greets Mary, but she's also greeting the hidden presence of Jesus. This is well explained because John, also hidden, leaps for joy. Jesus is there, but he cannot be seen. Just like we should greet our guests, as if Christ were there, because he cannot be seen. In my visits with the Christian communities in Pakistan, the people greeted and welcomed me as if I were some long-lost relative. I wonder if they culturally picked up on the cues from Mary and Elizabeth, and especially from Elizabeth's role as a host. The Gospels were, in point of fact, the basis for their tradition. Regardless, they wanted to know who I was, how I got there, what I was doing in Pakistan. I felt that they wanted to know me. What makes me laugh? What makes me cry? What is the larger world like? And at first, I was a bit disarmed by the interest, But I discovered that they weren't simply just going through the motions. They were genuinely interested, and they saw me as Christ, a blessing to them, and treated me accordingly. My presence was not an inconvenience. I never felt like they wanted me gone, that they wanted their privacy back, or whether they had something better to do. And as a result, my memories there go well beyond a trip or a vacation. I felt like I had met their souls and not just their bodies. Mary and Elizabeth paved the way how we must be intentional guests, but also gracious hosts. We normally give tangible gifts, but they show us that it is more important to give of ourselves, to pass and spend time, not to do just a drive-by drop-off or spend a minimal amount of time as if we were merely checking it off some list of obligations. Likewise, we must be good hosts, but not just to our guests as people we know, but also to the hidden Christ within. For if we can see Christ inside each and every person and serve them as we would serve the King of the universe, then we not only spread the gospel to all those who we encounter, but in the process, we save ourselves. These two women distilled for us the meaning of being Christian decades before either John the Baptist or Jesus Christ came onto the scene. And from a certain perspective, you can see that Jesus' commandment to love your neighbor as yourself was nothing new. Mary and Elizabeth already knew it. They were doing it. They were preaching it, and they were teaching it to others.